Well, hello there.
Hello.
My name is Jose Rivera. Some of you may not recognize me because I've gained a little weight since the last time I was here. And that's Chris Hertel, my sidekick for this presentation.
Hi.
And we'll be talking about Prequel. WAN acceleration and distributed caching for smart masses. Alrighty. First of all, who we are. If you actually don't know me, I've been swimming in the deep end of the SMB cesspool since about 2008 when this guy brought me into it, kicking and screaming.
You asked for it.
What? You were offering a job. I didn't know what it was going to be. And this guy has been a friendly neighborhood SMB geek since long before I can remember.
88, I think.
-4. Alrighty.
Might have been 87, I'm not sure.
Okay. And we've been working together for a while. These days, we are now with Red Hat. The opinions expressed, and I am probably obliged to say this, the opinions expressed are our own and not necessarily those of our employer, our respective spouses, pets, or the voices in our heads. And with that disclaimer out of the way, where are we going today? And what am I doing in this handbasket? All right, we're going to talk about branch cache, which is essentially what we're implementing here, what that is and how it works, as well as the Prequel project and its constituent parts.
That's us.
That's us.
All right, branch cache overview. Branch cache allows you to access content faster over a wide area network. WAN acceleration, very relatively simple in concept. It minimizes content copies over the WAN by caching copies of data on the local network. And it ensures that the cached copy is still valid by generating and storing fingerprints of all data that it copies from the server. Clients, when they're talking branch cache, do not request data directly. They request fingerprints of the data, where each fingerprint maps to a chunk of content. Fingerprints are then used to find cache content in the local local network. If content is not found in the local cache, then it is retrieved over the WAN. And the cache, whatever local cache is, keeps a fingerprint to content mapping. Now I say whatever the cache is because there are two modes supported by branch cache. The first one is the distributed cache mode. Let me make sure it's still showing up properly. Okay.
I'm watching.
In distributed cache mode, each node is a peer, and each node in the network keeps a cache of all the content it has downloaded from a branch cache-enabled server on the other end.
Note that that is limited to the local network. It's a broadcast domain.
Yes. Clients broadcast to find any content in their local cache, so it's limited by LAN or subnet. The other one is hosted cache mode. This one is slightly less new agey, but when a client retrieves content, it tells a local server called the hosted cache server that it has content ready for caching. The cache node retrieves said content from the client and stores it so that other clients can ask it for any cache it may have. And clients always query the cache node for content. And this means, and they just contact the node directly, which means it is not landlocked. So if your remote location consists of multiple subnets, this is a more ideal solution for you.
I want you to notice, though, if you look at this, how many people are familiar with the workings of the old NetBIOS name service, TCP NetBIOS name service? Yeah, okay, I got one or two in here. It's basically the same. If you replace that piece with a WIN server, the design is pretty much the same basic idea.
We're not doing much new here, folks, but it's being used in interesting ways. All right, any questions so far about the basics of branch cache?
Yeah, branch cache is a Microsoft thing, and we're studying it and implementing it in open source. Anybody? You want to know anything about how it works? Okay.
Alrighty. Now the Prequel project. That's us. It is an open source implementation of PeerDist. This is the first time we've mentioned PeerDist this presentation because they generally like it better that way. PeerDist is the protocol suite underlying the BranchCache product. So we are an implementation of PeerDist, much like BranchCache is Microsoft's implementation of PeerDist.
Let me know if we got that wrong, Jim.
This project started, what, 2 years ago now?
Yeah, we just started fussing with it 2 years ago.
Yeah, we just kind of started reading documentations and brainstorming about 2 years ago, and we came up with a few simple goals. We wanted a piece called PrequelD, a server-side hash generation daemon to interface with things like Samba or your favorite HTTP server. We wanted a piece called PrequelHC, or the hosted cache server, to run in tandem or independent with PrequelD or anything else. The idea being that you could just drop it in place between, you know, Windows clients and a Windows server or another PeerDist enabled server, and it would act as hosted cache for that setup. In addition, we wanted a Prequel client for Linux that would allow basically anything that talks over a network to use PeerDist. And then there are also a set of auxiliary tools that we figured we could use both for both for development, testing, and perhaps for troubleshooting during production. This project is hosted here.
And the websites are kind of sparse and self-referential, so you have to kind of poke around before you find all the good stuff. Anybody got time they want to spend helping us get the websites really polished? Let me know.
Yes, if anybody here at all ever feels that we're somehow doing it wrong, let us know. We will gladly indoctrinate, I mean make use of your help. And below that are the relevant Microsoft documents we've been using to implement these protocols.
Those are starting points. There are plenty more in that set.
All right. And now, Chris?
I get to take over because this is the part that I worked on a while ago. The space bar?
Page down.
Page down, okay. Up there. Page down is up. PrequelD is a, you know, it's a simple userland daemon that you can run in nice mode. It runs in the background to generate the what's called the content information, the hashes. Okay, it just goes through the list of files that are supposed to be available via this protocol and just generates the hashes ahead of time so that they're there when the next client comes along and says, I want them. Okay. The hashes are all stored, again, this is all userland daemon, so the hashes are all stored in another directory that you specify in the configuration file. Not a big deal, really. And this was really easy to implement, by the way. Cache files are, well, this is actually old. I've changed that. That line is old. I should have caught that. They are openable shared read. What they are is also, they're, the daemon runs under root permission, so the files are given the same username, group ID, and permissions that the original file had, so that whatever daemon, whether it's Samba or Apache or some other web server, whatever daemon is accessing those files has to go through the same steps. It can easily go through the same steps to open this file as it would for any content that it would be serving. Okay. What I've done is I've set it up so that it speaks over a Unix domain socket. And so there's a bit of client code that then talks to the other end of that socket, so you can send a couple of simple queries to get the information from the server about, you know, I want to open this file, but I want the cache, so what's the path name of the cache? You get the path name of the cache back. Now you can use other functions in the library that I've designed but not written that allow you to open and access the content information. It currently works. I had it tested and running. It was doing pretty well. I needed to add a few things, some signal handling. It should traverse the directories in the background to clean things up and to pre-cache things that might be needed later. It's a simple multi-threaded daemon. It's nothing really fancy there. And then again, I just described the content. The client is just really a library. It's just a bit of C code that you include into whatever you're writing. It should be perfectly easy to write a Python module to do exactly the same thing, because all it does is go out, open the file. First it queries the server to find the right file name, and then it goes out and opens the file and reads the parts that it needs. Okay. What happened was that I tore it apart recently. And the reason I tore it apart was that I had a few things I wanted to finish, so I started working on the code, and I realized that there were a lot of things about the communication between the client and the server I didn't like, so I decided to rip it apart and put it back together again, and that's the state it's in now, at least in my tree. The current one on the public tree is the working version from earlier. The core functions have been working for quite a long time. This is actually very easy stuff to implement once you understand the basic concepts. It's fairly trivial, to be honest. So to some extent, I haven't been working on it because I've been interested in other things that I have to do in my life. So I haven't gotten very far on cleaning up the final pieces. To-do list, finish the implementation of the C client, simple Python client, missing features. Those are the basic parts I have to do yet on this. And again, anybody who's interested in, you know, either pushing me, because quite honestly, that's one of the things. Every time we do a presentation on this, we get a bigger audience. We get more people who are like, hey, I want to know about that thing. Maybe I could use that thing. What else could I do with that thing?
Oh, hey, this sounds really cool.
Yeah. What are the parts and pieces? How else could they be leveraged? You know, here we have a standard now for fingerprinting data. Right, static data, we've got a standard for it, essentially, a de facto standard, but a standard nonetheless. How can we use that? And people get interested in this, but I don't get a lot of push. I didn't hear from anybody, you know, out of these conferences. So, you know, if you're interested, talk to me. Let's keep going on this, and let me know how important it is to you. All right, and back to you.
All righty. Prequel HC, the Prequel Hosted Cache Server.
This is where real progress has been made in the last few months.
Yes. Similarly, this is actually relatively trivial to implement, but it's a matter of having push and thus prioritizing time from having that push. It's taken me, when did I actually start working on this?
I don't remember. It was a while ago. It wasn't. It was after SDC.
Yeah, so it's been about 6 months, and I've put in about maybe a total of a couple weeks worth of development, and it's by and large almost done. It was in fact working before I broke it this morning. So, Prequel HC. It is a standalone HTTPS server. It implements two sub-protocols, the PureDisk hosted cache protocol and the PureDisk retrieval protocol. And it's written in Python because I like it and I can write it fast.
And actually, it's not required that it be, you know, super sleek and effervescent. It just has to work at this point, so.
Mm-hmm. First step, implement a prototype. Second step, tune it. All right, the hosted cache protocol. It is used by clients, not the pair I'm writing, but other clients, to offer content to the hosted cache server, me.
So if you've got a web client, a web browser that is using this protocol, the PureDisk protocol, and it grabs some fingerprints and some content, okay, it can then send a message to the hosted cache and say, I've got this, you want it?
And it is also used by servers to fetch content information from clients. Now, the reason I call this an HTTPS server is because PureDisk version 1 requires HTTPS, whereas PureDisk version 2 moves some things around and shares a little less information, so it only requires HTTP. Now, in my end, that doesn't really do a whole lot of good for me because it means I have to support both versions of the protocol, and now I have a server that's listening on two ports. the retrieval protocol is used by the hosted cache server to actually fetch the content, the actual bytes over there from the clients that are wanting to share it with the hosted cache. And all this is transmitted over HTTP. However, the data blocks are encrypted on the wire. So you can get the individual encrypted chunks, but without a lot of back-end information, it's just useless garbage to you.
The main point of this is to ensure that nobody can inject invalid data into the response and mess up the content. The initial transfer from the server to the hosted cache, the original server via the client to the hosted cache doesn't need to be encrypted. It can be, but it doesn't need to be, because you're getting fingerprints and you're getting real content the real content is coming down the way it normally would. But after that, you want to make sure that nobody changes the content you receive locally. All right, so that's why this is an important piece.
Mm-hmm. Jumping back here a second, the hosted cache protocol is, quite frankly, one of the shortest documents I've read in Microsoft's protocol library. It is, in fact, a
Jim
amazing.
Laughs.
What?
Jim laughs.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I can look that up to embarrass him later. Mostly because the screen is currently taken up with an interesting display I've never seen before, so I don't want to make it go away. It has three messages. It has three request messages. That's it. And all the responses are either okay or not okay. That's all the protocol is. There's a lot of back-end stuff that happens in the hosted cache with, you know, verifying the content information and fetching all the appropriate content. But as far as the actual communication goes, that simple. This one is slightly trickier because with this one, you actually have to, this is the part that generates the content information and actually fetches the data and does most of the heavy lifting, despite the fact that it doesn't get the name in the product that we're trying to produce here. All right, future of this. C libraries for the various sub-protocols. In fact, just general C library implementation of most of the peer-to-peer sub-protocols would be one direction we would want to go, just for the sake of improving performance if it proves to be needed, which it will likely.
Actually, I'm not so sure it will, but go ahead.
Who knows? Apache module, CGI script, other things that interface with existing projects?
In other words, instead of using the Python HTTP, HTTPS server modules, we would write this up so that it could be integrated with something like Apache or Lighty or one of those.
And, you know, this might actually become its own viable project as opposed to just being a proof of concept. We might maintain our own standalone server written in Python if people find it useful. All right, the prequel client, uncharted territory. Here we're just kind of speculating as to what we would want. So for instance, you know, a user land client would be relatively easy. It would have simple user management and applications would need to call it directly, no big. An in-kernel client is more interesting but more daunting. We could perhaps integrate it with the in-kernel sieves client. We could mesh it with file systems that currently maintain a similar enough, if not identical, caching system. And
well, related, but not necessarily similar.
Yeah. And we could use it internally to just do deduplication, because that's one of the interesting side benefits of this protocol.
Well, as deduplication becomes more common in different file systems that are being developed these days, the ability to use the peer-dist version 2 protocol, which allows you to use your own algorithms and your own block sizes and a variety of other things that it makes flexible, those deduplication algorithms become the fingerprinting algorithm. And you can now distribute using that kind of information. In fact, that's something that these guys at Microsoft have already done. or are doing? You have done or are doing? I know that there's how you leverage Pyrdus version 2. Just using dedupe technology, things like that.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. So they've done it. Okay. Good. So we're behind. We got to get caught up, but we need more interest from people saying, "Yeah, let's do this now." Okay.
Give us more interest, and we can have validation for spending more time on it. All right. Prequel tools, an interesting menagerie of things we've cobbled together.
Doesn't everybody have one of these in their toolkit? I mean, the ball peen pipe wrench you have, right? Okay.
He's proud of this one. All right. We've got PD dump, something that'll just take in actual content and spew out content information in Pyrdist version 1 format. PQ size calc. This one is a relatively simple tool that took Chris quite a while to actually write, relatively in relation to how simple it is. You just give it a file and it tells you how big the content information would be.
You give it a file size.
Oh, it's file size?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, you give it a file size and
it didn't take me long to write this one.
Relative to how simple it is, yeah. No.
Okay. Half an hour.
OSSL KeyDX. Decrypt a branch cache key extracted from Windows.
So one of the things Windows allows you to do with their branch cache system, every server generates its own signing key, because they sign the content information being sent. It's only a signature. It's not a security thing per se. It makes sure that the correct content is coming from the correct place. That when you go to the server, you see the signature is part of the information you get. You want to make sure that the information in your cache has the same signature. If it does, then you've got the correct content. That's what you're doing it for, right? But Windows allows you through a PowerShell command to extract the key that is used. And that way, if you have peer servers, you could use that key on multiple servers that are distributing the same content, right? And that way, they're all signed with the same information. So if I get the original content from server one, but I get the fingerprints the second or third time through, I get the fingerprints from server two, they're not going to collide. They're going to be OK. It's going to say, yes, that's good.
It's like they were considering multiple nodes to host all this stuff.
How about
stuff?
That? This is the one that really took me time to do, and that's because the key that is extracted is also encrypted, AES encrypted. And originally, the documentation didn't give the full algorithm for how to decrypt it. Didn't give the initialization vector, so I had to go to Microsoft and get that information. And they were very good about making sure it was there, so that was great. So that's what we did, and then now you can decrypt it, and now you get this three pieces of information out of the extracted key, and you can load it into a different system, for example, a Linux system. The first implementation I did of all this was a CGI script, and I loaded a key from a Windows server, and I could load it into my own code, my CGI script, and determine that I was getting exactly the right answer from my code, because I was serving the same content, and I could prove that I was getting the right information, so I had it implemented correctly. It's a very useful piece.
Speaking of, PQCGI is the CGI program he was just mentioning. Generate content information on the fly.
That's the second one there.
Yeah. And then STIB. It's sort of a little pet project of ours. It implements BITS, Background Internet Transfer Service, I believe.
Background Intelligent, believe
Intelligent.
It or not.
Intelligent. Great. It's used for things like Windows updates.
The Windows updates is a download. So BITS basically runs in the background. It downloads a chunk, and then it maybe waits a little while, and then downloads another chunk, and it does this in sequence. The thing is that BITS also supports uploads, and nobody had implemented that. So that's an implementation of the uploads of BITS uploads for Linux.
That one was actually really fun to write.
It was fun to write. It's not, it's still missing things, there's certain authentication things that are missing and things like that.
Yeah, but the base protocol
is. But it's you know, it's basically it's testing software. It's in our tools directory.
Yeah. In the prequel project, I imagine.
It's actually in its own project.
Oh, okay.
But it's still a tool.
Alrighty, and technically that's it. That's all the slides I had right now. Hooray!
Ah.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. All right. We'll put this up here again, and then all right. Ask, heckle, inquire. We insist.
Did you want to ask something?
No. Okay.
Oh, okay.
See?
Fine.
Frogs.
Great. Everyone's.
Actually, they've got tails, so I guess they're mutants.
Any comments? Questions?
So if I got you right, you need on the client side support in the application like Samba to access this branch cache. Is this right?
Yes.
Okay.
So in order to access it, SMB has an IOCTL. So there's a bit somewhere. I have to go back and look at the docs, but I think there's a bit somewhere that you set to say I can take fingerprints if you have them. And if the server responds, hey, I've got those, instead of giving you the content, then you call this IOCTL over the wire. It brings down the content information, again, the hashes. Okay. In HTTP, it's mind-blowingly simple. You add peer-dist as one of the accepted encoding types, and then a couple other headers that you put in there. So. That's why, you know, if we added this, for example, to wget, you could get the fingerprints instead of getting the content, and that would be very useful to be able to do. So if anybody works on, you know, wget, let me know. But we'll tie this in. Pardon? Well, you could. Whoop.
Yeah, the actual. The actual amount of work required to integrate, you know, something like Samba with Prequel is mind-blowingly tiny. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of, you know, specifying a bit and then, okay, here Prequel, get this stuff.
Okay, so I was thinking about a Fuse file system layer, for example, for the Linux client. That
you could do that.
Yep, you could do that.
Okay.
Yeah. You could do that. You could do that, but you still need to have a transport for the content.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So you still need to have a transport for the content, because honestly, this is not our top priority.
Okay.
That to answer your question.
Other
right. Right. This unfortunately is not our top priority. We would like it to be, but we have jobs now. We don't work for you guys anymore.
So Apache, I mean, you were just saying that your HTTP request should include peer-dist as a content encoding, right?
Right.
But you said you were doing something with it. I mean, the server has to know this too.
Right, the server side. So
and why would an HTTP, why would a browser care much about this without the infrastructure?
In a Windows environment, I don't actually know how you implement it.
Well, yeah, I get it in the Windows environment. I presume you're proposing a non-Windows environment here.
Right. So when we talk about the client piece, the Prequel client, okay, we're saying how would we, because this is an open question, how would we integrate this protocol and the features of this protocol right. into Linux, for
right.
example, right?
Right.
And so you have to have a mechanism that allows, for example, Firefox to request the content information and then store the content information, do the local lookup.
If it's a peer cache, yeah.
Right. Do the local lookup, whatever way it does, and then retrieve the content locally if it's available, or go back to the server, get the actual content, and store that, and then forward that along either to the hosted cache or keep it in the local cache, right? You have to have all that infrastructure, right? So the first piece is to say, well, how do we store that local infrastructure? How do we create that local infrastructure in Linux? Do we create it in user space, or do we create it in the kernel?
The advantage of creating it in the kernel is that it becomes available now more readily to a variety of different things that are going on. There are a couple of other things I think we had in the slide as far as, you know, this argument. But then it's also a piece in the kernel. And that's like, ew, you know, why would we want to do that? The other piece of this that's important is, let's say we take Firefox and we add this feature. Firefox has now got to know what to do with all this stuff it's bringing down, right? It can't just put it in its own cache. It's got to say, I'm going to give the content information to the prequel system. I'm going to give the content to the prequel system. So we have to have a good, solid, consistent interface to provide.
All right, so you're going to enlist the Apache open source project, the Mozilla open source project, and the Linux kernel, and you're going to get them all to work together to do this?
Or? We're going stepwise. We're doing the server first because it's very easy to add just a piece to Apache.
Yeah.
That can do this. Samba, again, you just add, you know.
Sounds good. Yeah.
So that part's easy. And then suddenly we're supporting Windows 7 clients and Windows 8 clients.
Yeah, excellent.
And that's great, right? But to get support for this in a Linux client, we have to do a lot more thinking, and I think we have to get everything else done and prove that we've got working code and can make this good.
I think I get it.
Yeah, once we have the server side going and we got Windows machines saying, oh look, I'm getting peer disinformation from Apache servers, then we might either generate enough interest or get fed up and do it ourselves to do things like, you know, Firefox plugins, Chrome plugins to do the actual peer disk stuff.
Right. Well, I'll just make the observation that the Samba 4 AD server makes a lot of sense in small remote offices, and so does peer disk. And, you know, there are ways that you might consider working these all together.
Right on.
Yeah, we're thinking about that. Our testing platform for Jose's part, the prequel hosted cache. Our testing platform for the prequel hosted cache is a $30 ARM box. Oh, actually, Jose's using a Raspberry Pi. Okay, and that's to give you an idea. Yes, we're thinking of these things. Okay. Thank you.
And to, you know, take that. And to just show that we're thinking about it, you know, main reason I'm using a Pi is because, oh look, maybe I could talk to Kai or somebody and be like, hey Kai, you like running things on Pis, don't you? And so on. Anybody else? We've got time. Okay.
If not, thank you very much.